Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's January 26th, and this is Brad Culp, and Sam Grass is not here this morning. Sam is up to his eyeballs in drywall mud as we speak. He's taken a little bit of a break from his work at the office and doing some work at home. I have Lee Cantor in the studio with me. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Brad. How are things over in your world? After he's done, is when Sam's done, he's coming to your house for the drywall?
I'm hoping. I got all kinds of chores for him to do.
I didn't know this was part of his job description.
Well, he's a man of many responsibilities. So, well, it's a chilly gray morning in Atlanta, and the only good news is that it's not snowing. So
right.
We're happy about that. We have Kevin Ritz in Dallas this morning and guests from the Muscular Dystrophy Association, Angela Presley and Victoria Williams. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Brad and Lee. It is warming up a little bit here in Dallas, and we are very excited to have Victoria and Angela with us this morning. And we're going to go ahead and get started with Victoria. Victoria, why don't you give us a little bit of background on where you're from and how you got to Muscular Dystrophy Association of Dallas.
Cool. Well, I'm right here from Dallas. I'm actually from Duncanville. I kind of started with MDA after graduating from OU, Boomer Sooner. I was an intern doing PR, and then they, I guess like me from Mercer, they brought me back in December 2008, and I've been there ever since. And I do a lot of the fundraising with MDA, and I also do a lot of the public relations and social media outreaches, trying to really increase that brand, with what MDA does, and making sure people know about us and all the great things that we do. So it's a great job, and we help a lot of people, and keeps us busy for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And Angela, you've been on before, but for some of our listeners who may not have heard your last visit with us, can you do the same thing and just kind of refresh our memory?
Sure. I started with MDA back in 2002. I graduated from Texas Tech in May of 2000. And in 2002, I started with MDA. Same as Victoria, I did fundraising for a couple years. And then there became an opening in the position that I do now. So I work with our families, and I attend all of our clinics and support groups, and just been a resource for them, sort of like a social worker.
Okay. Well, great. And we brought you both specifically in today to talk about the muscle walk that's coming up on March 5th. Victoria, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the muscle walk is and how it benefits the community.
Okay. Well, the Muscle Walk is probably one of the biggest events that we have at MDA. It's our walk event being held March 5th at Cowboy Stadium, which we're very excited about. Then we hope that Super Bowl spirit lingers for one more month into our walk. And basically, it's just a big family reunion for all of our families and vendors and sponsors and MDA staff, and kind of for a way for us to meet and have one big rally, towards the fight, towards finding an end and cure for these diseases. It begins at 8:30 in the morning, and people come there. There are games and crafts for the kids and resources for families that may need additional help. And, of course, it's a great chance to see the beautiful stadium that is Jerry's World. But it's really a great event for us. We love seeing everyone come out. It's a fundraising event kind of with a focus on raising money for research for all of our diseases, especially, AL to 8 years. It used to be a Grapevine Mills Mall, and now we've really changed to the Cowboy Stadium. So we're very, very excited about it. And Angela, do you have anything to add?
It's the biggest MDA walk in the country.
Yes, it is. So we have people come out there to, learn more about the walk. And I think Angela and her counterparts do a great job of really supporting it and really pushing it at clinic, and without what they do, the event would really be nothing, honestly. So
Angela, if people wanted to come out and experience it, what can they expect, and how specifically does it help families who are dealing with loved ones with either ALS or another disease?
Well, like we said, it's the biggest walk in the country. So there's over 2,000 people that attend the walk. So I think the biggest biggest thing that the families can get out of coming to the walk is just seeing all of the other people that are going through the same fight that they are, by meeting other families, talking to other families, and like I said, just knowing that there's other people out there.
Yeah, that's great. And Angela, what are the different ways that people can get involved in addition to the walk? Victoria, how are some of the additional ways people can get involved with helping MDA in addition to the walk?
Well, we have a number of it. A lot of things, I guess for the walk, if you want to have a team, but throughout the year we have so many events that are actually, out in the public. There's Shamrocks that's being done here in March, where you're going to a local grocery store, Lowe's, anything like that, just spend for $1 buy a Shamrock, which goes towards research and that kind of thing. Summer camp, you can maybe give $1 to firefighters fill in the blue on the street in the spring sometime. Maybe you'll be fortunate enough to be a jobber with us for in a walk-up program. But the walk itself is probably a great chance to really come out there and really see just not what we do, but who we serve. I think we don't have any other events like that where all of us kind of come together and we really see all the kids and adults that have the diseases that we cover, and it's really a great, kind of a big inspiration for us, at the beginning of the year, to see who we serve and help them fight the disease and do all we can to, find a cure, so.
Yeah. Angela, and we were talking about this before, and I think a lot of people associate the MDA with Jerry's Kids and that sort of thing, but there's a lot more to it, especially with seniors. What are some of the things that families who might be dealing with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, what are some of the things you do to support them?
Well, I think most importantly, we have our clinics. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we have 5 clinics that our families can attend. And when they go to the clinics, they see neuromuscular specialists, so neurologists that specialize in muscular dystrophy or ALS. And at the clinics, especially at the ALS clinic, it's a multidisciplinary clinic. So not only do they see the neurologist, but they also see a social worker, a speech therapist, a physical therapist, a counselor, and of course the MDA representative. So there really are a lot of resources just at their one clinic visit where they can get a lot of help. Additionally, we have ALS support groups. We hold those once a month. We have one in Dallas and one in Fort Worth. Where the families can come together and just meet other families, talk about the struggles and the issues that they're going through, and get support that way. So,
okay. And now, if somebody is new to this and they just got a diagnosis or they're experiencing this for the first time, is the walk a good place for them to start in gathering information?
I think the walk is definitely a great place to start. Because a lot of the times when people first get diagnosed, their families want to help them. And so this is a great way for their families and friends to rally around them to come and support, to support them and to support ALS research. So everyone feels like they're helping.
Right. And Victoria, this is probably a good question for you. I know that you have booths and things like that. What are some of the organizations that come out and support that? Do you know any off the top of your head?
I know we have a lot of support from GEICO comes out. They're a huge sponsor and supporter of MDA. We have Majors Medical that comes out to support MDA. United Rehab comes out to support MDA. A lot of them are, they're vendors that really provide equipment and that kind of thing to the family and kids that we serve. So there's some resources there. University of Phoenix has been a sponsor of MDA before, kind of helping our younger kids kind of transition into, that adulthood. So lots of different things for people to come out there and see.
If people want to find more information about the walk, where can they go to get that information?
You can visit joinmda.org/DFW Muscle Walk 2011 or call our office, if that's too long to remember, at 972-480-0011 and just ask to get more information about the walk.
Okay. Well, great. And Angela, if you have one piece of advice for people who might be dealing with this for the first time or it's been an ongoing fight, what would that piece of advice be?
I think that would be just to let in your family and friends and let them help help you in any way they can. Not only will that help you in the long run, but it really does make people feel good about themselves to help other people. So it's sort of a win-win situation.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And, Brad, I'll throw it back to you.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Angela and Victoria. Angela, I do want to just go back to one thing you were talking about a minute ago and ask a question. And you were talking about the five clinics that are around the Dallas area, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that. Where are they, and is there a cost for people to come into the clinic? And, what is the extent of service?
I'm sorry, we're kind of having trouble hearing you. I think you might be asking about if it costs anyone to attend the clinic.
Yes. Where are they? Where are they located around the Dallas area? And is there a cost to use the clinic? And what is the extent of the services that can be provided through the clinic?
The clinics, we have, our largest clinic is at UT Southwestern Medical Center, downtown Dallas, and that is where we see our adults and most of our adults that have ALS. We also have another ALS clinic at Texas Neurology, which is in Dallas as well, that sees just ALS patients. We have a clinic in Arlington at Neurology Associates of Arlington that sees our adult patients, ALS, and other neuromuscular diseases. And then we have two children's clinics. We have a clinic in Fort Worth at Cook Children's Medical Center and a clinic in Dallas at Children's Medical Center. And all of the clinics are pretty much run the same way. We have a grant system. So through all of the fundraising efforts at MDA, we then allocate money to each of these facilities to pay for the services that our patients see when they're at clinic. Most of the services are covered, definitely the clinic visits, and there's many labs and just other tests that would be covered by MDA when our families go to clinic. So it's a great opportunity. Not only are they able to see these specialists, but their visits are primarily paid for. And like I said, most of the clinics are multidisciplinary clinics. So they see a wide variety of specialists, not only the neurologists, but a lot of different therapists that are able to help them in their journey and give them different resources.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you again, Angela and Victoria, for being with us today. And to our listeners in the Dallas area, put March 5th on your calendar. And even before that, if you have an interest in being in the walk to help raise money for this group of diseases, please contact them and get involved. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to shift back to Atlanta here then. We have Patty Fehlig with us this morning. Patty is a social worker and community relations coordinator with Longleaf Hospice. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here with us this morning.
It's my honor.
So let's start kind of the same way we did with the guests in Dallas. If you could just give us a little bit of your background, where you're from and where you went to school and how you got involved in service to our seniors.
Great. I was born and lived all my life until I went away to college in a small Midwestern city in Missouri. And when I say small, I mean small. There's 650 residents. The interesting thing, I think, when I look back is that it was really a multi-generational community. Elderly and seniors were loved and respected and cared for, and I think that stuck with me through the years. I attended Central Missouri State, which is now University of Central Missouri, and Warrensburg, Missouri, from 70 to 74, where I received my Bachelor's of Science degree. Many, many years later, in 1989, when my youngest daughter started kindergarten, I went back to the University of Georgia and obtained my Master's in Social Work degree.
Now, can you share a little bit about what it was like when you were going to college and thinking about social work, and then you actually started doing social work? You know, the theory as opposed to the reality.
Right.
Was it exactly the same?
No. Well, backing up a little bit, I had never met a social worker in my life before I decided that's what I wanted to do. I came from a family and a community of school teachers, educators. So if you went to college, you're going to college to be a teacher. And I was a rebellious 60s, 70s teenager, and I decided I don't want to do that. So one day, actually, I was sitting in a Sunday school class, and we had a lesson on a social worker, and they were talking about what she did or what this person did, and I said, hey, I can go to college and I don't have to be a teacher. I can be a social worker. That would be something I'd love to do. And I think I'm really, I'm not unique, but my path has been unique in that I really haven't wavered off being a social worker. I had a mentor once who was a social worker, and she said, you know, always say who you are, not what you do. And social workers do a lot of things. A lot of them call themselves psychotherapists, or a lot of them call discharge planners. But truly what I feel like I do and all social workers should say they do is we're a social worker doing many different kinds of roles.
Now, when you're there as a social worker, what is your, like you said, there's lots of different roles. What's your sweet spot? What do you prefer to be doing?
I prefer every minute of my life working with seniors and their families. I had thought when I was in graduate school, and I did my internship actually with Gwinnett County School System, thinking I wanted to be a school social worker. And I think looking back, I primarily did that because the holidays and their calendar were...
It seemed like a good lifestyle.
Yeah,
huh?
Well, we're comfortable with my two children. Again, I mean, I'm a social worker by profession, but I'm a parent, number one.
Well, and you saw your parents have all those vacation days right along with you as teachers.
Yeah.
So.
You're like, hey, I can get used
right
to this.
In. Right.
I hated it. I could never get away from my mother. The principal, I had a boyfriend once in high school, and the principal in the high school walked down to my mother's first grade class. Remember, these are really small schools, so the elementary, middle, and high school are all together. He walked down and told my mother in her first grade class that I was holding hands with a boy upstairs in high school. So, you know, they did have good holidays, but it wasn't always so great being that enmeshed with the family educators.
Funny. So when you finished your graduate degree, you did your internship. Where did you go after that? What was the first job as a freshly minted Master of Social Work?
I was looking for something, again, with flexibility, but I had had a bent since my bachelor's years as a social worker to be in the healthcare arena. So my first opportunity was in home healthcare. So I was at with Staplers Home Healthcare for 9 years, actually, as a social worker in multi different areas of the Atlanta area. And although the sickness and death is no respecter of age, we did find that most of the clients we worked with were elderly, homebound people that I delivered psychosocial kind of services to.
Did you find that they liked it was better for them to be in their home as opposed to not?
Well, you know, my journey after that took me into assisted living care, but I think that there's not a person, an elderly person, that would throw a party and say, yay, I get to leave my home and go into an institution.
Right. But when the family's deciding that, is it the family deciding that or is the senior typically?
For home health care or leaving the home?
You know, in that transition from being at home, and I'm sure the family wants them to stay at home as long as they can. And then since you've seen both sides of the coin here, can you just share a little bit about how that all plays out?
Yeah, I think that when a decision is made that an aging person is no longer safe at home, then the discussion begins, well, what are my options? I think the senior would most often say, well, if I can't be by myself, can I bring someone in to help me? And that would be their number one choice. Sometimes either finances or the community where they live or many other options does not allow that. So they choose the next step, which for us now is usually assisted living care, and then they move on as their health care declines to skilled nursing facilities.
So you told me earlier that you spent a number of years as executive director in an assisted living, and then you... And then you had the opportunity to transition into hospice where you are today. Tell me a little bit about what it was that moved you from the assisted living environment into hospice.
I found that I love being in assisted living because every day I got to go in and see seniors, and I got to hopefully make their life a little bit happier and a little bit easier. But I got frustrated because, darn it, I had to worry about the budget. And so a building can't run unless it has a budget to live with. And so I found more and more of my time taking care of the logistics and financial and infrastructure of a building than being able to deal one-on-one with making a difference in the resident's life. Although they had to have hot water and they had to have food and they had to have paid caregivers there, but that wasn't really making my heart sing so much. I shared with you, Brad, that I had a personal experience where I say it's serendipitous, where during my last assisted living executorship, I fell on some slippery sidewalk and hit the back of my head and was discovered through just, you know, routine testing that I had a one in a million type of diagnosis of a pituitary tumor. And I think that gave me some real wake-up messages that, you know, life is really short and we never know when it changes, so why don't you pursue doing what really makes your heart sing and helping it, seniors in a different way?
It's always interesting when it becomes very clear to everybody that things happen for a reason. You know, I mean, you had a fall, you had a serious injury, and yet through that they discovered, you know, the tumor that you were able to then, you know, get on top of through specialized treatment. Yeah.
The fall really saved my life in many ways. Usually you start having vision problems or it becomes inoperable. The tumor does. So it was a real blessing in disguise.
So let's transition and talk a little bit about Longleaf.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been there. You told me you've been there 2 years. So tell me about how you got there and then just talk a little bit about Longleaf Hospice and what they do and how they do it and why you like being there.
Well, you may be familiar with the number of hospice providers in the Atlanta area. It's almost embarrassing. Last count, I heard that there were over 100 individual hospice providers. I've been on the other side of receiving hospice marketers, and I know that it could fill your whole day just welcoming hospice provider marketers in to talk to you. So I had a big venue of opportunities who to choose from, and I chose Longleaf because I think that the leaders of a company set the tone. And I knew Carla Furman, who we always recognized as the hospice guru. She had been in multiple different hospice agencies, and she was the clinical director, the hospice director there at Longleaf. And so I called her one day and said, you know, I'm thinking about going into hospice again, and the rest is history. I went over, I was their first marketer there, and we've grown, and I think that as I say, the leadership sets the tone. The real focus is on patient care, individualized patient care. There's Medicare requirements that all hospices have to follow, their rules and regs, but it doesn't say, look at that patient, look at that environment, look at the family structure, and design your care and deliver your care according to the needs of that patient and their family.
And where are most of your clients? Are they in the home? Are they in a facility?
A misnomer to many people, although hospice has been in the United States since the late 60s, a misnomer still is that hospice is a place you go. When I'm in assisted livings a lot, educating on hospice, and when I talk to patients or seniors and their families, they say, but I want to stay home, wherever home might be. So I explained to them that Longleaf does not have a brick-and-mortar facility. we believe and try to listen to the statistics that say 99% of people prefer to stay home until their last breath. So we deliver the hospice end-of-life care to them in their homes primarily. Although their homes may be assisted living, they may be skilled nursing facilities, and if the symptoms can't be managed in the place they're calling home, then there are brick-and-mortar inpatient, what's called general inpatient facilities for hospice, that we can place a patient in for a short period of time.
Now, I'd like to take a step back a little bit, and because it's so important, I think that hospice is one of those things that people kind of have a vague idea. They know what it is, but they really, really don't know what it is. And then when a family uses hospice, they're all like, I wish I would have known about this 6 months, a year before. Right. So do you mind just kind of giving us a summary about what hospice can do, can't do, mm-hmm. and why it's one of those things that it's best to be contacting them sooner rather than later?
I think that it's a cultural fear that our country especially has of death. We tend to live like we're going to be here forever and don't do any preparations. We do all kinds of financial planning and look at where we want to go on our next cruise, but we never plan that, you know, we may have a final day on this earth. And I think if we could normalize death as part of living, then that we can start making better plans. Hospice was approved by Medicare, and then all private insurance follows their protocol, that end-of-life care can be delivered as a benefit of Medicare. And how Medicare defines end-of-life is that if someone has a diagnosis that unless miraculous things happen, they probably only have 6 months or less to live. Thankfully, the healthcare profession and most citizens now realize that we don't have a crystal ball and we can't define what 6 months is. So how I like to introduce hospice to people is I say, if you have a life-limiting illness that looks like there's no cure or treatment for, we need to start talking about what kind of care you can have. It's not, I tell doctors this every day, it's not as if hospice is no care. You can either have care or no care, and that's often introduced to patients in that way. The doctor says, there's nothing else I can do for you. There's no more treatment. There's no more care. Well, there is. It's just a different kind of care, and I wish that we would put hospice aside and just call it palliative care, which is comfort care,
right? Mm.
Which is a much easier thing to swallow or hear often than hospice care.
Sure,
because people think like, they gave up or there's, you know, that the end is around the corner where, like you said, you know, the doctors don't know. It could be a week. It could be a month. It could be a year. I mean, you just have no idea.
And why not? If it's a year or 2 years or 5 years, why not receive the wonderful skilled care that is available to you? Hospice is not going to accelerate your end of life or make it come sooner, but it will give you a quality of life. And we have team meeting at Longleaf every Wednesday, which I'm missing today. But we discuss about, well, is that person still appropriate for hospice? And it's amazing how people graduate out of hospice, and sometimes with the extra care, symptom management, they do stabilize for a while. We discharge them.
Right.
We know they'll be back.
Right. It's not necessarily a one-way ticket.
No, it right. truly isn't.
It's Lee, you made a really good point, which is a lot of people look at hospice patients and say, oh, they've given up. When that doesn't have to be the case, shouldn't be the case. Yeah. And to your point, in our business at Griswold Special Care, we've seen clients that have been on hospice for 2-3 years, yeah, leave hospice for a year and go back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about giving up hope. It's about changing the regimen of care,
mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm, you know, and providing new hope for a better quality of life for the years that you have remaining.
Right, exactly. And I just think we do a terrible job as a country in this area. And I think that you never hear someone say, oh, that hospice, that was a waste of time. It's always, I wish I would have known about this sooner.
Yeah.
I wish, and I don't know if it's a function of the doctors not communicating it or whatever the situation is. Anything we can do to get the word out that this is an option that you should be mindful of and then be part of the conversation.
And there's no cost involved. You know, it's a free, it's a free service. If you even are concerned about finding a bargain, it's a true bargain. But I think that you'll find our next generation of people, the baby boomers, are not going to take the doctor's word as gospel anymore. I think they'll question it. I'm not downplaying doctors because their Hippocratic oath says, you know, do all you can to save a person. But there are limitations, and I think a good physician realizes when it's time to call in another specialty. A heart doctor would not try to take care of a fractured bone, hopefully, in the hip. And so they're not equipped nor trained to do end-of-life care so much. So it's time to call in another resource who specializes in making sure life is worth living.
Patty, you referred earlier, I think, to the fact that Longleaf Hospice hasn't been around all that long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So how long has it been around? And you also alluded to the fact that there are over 100 hospices in the Atlanta area. Mm-hmm. So why was Longleaf created? What was the vision? And I don't know if Carla was one of the founders, but you seem to imply that. So can you?
Right, right. She was one of the visionaries of creating Longleaf. Longleaf was actually started by a group of oncologists with Georgia Cancer Specialist. And they've been, I think, in business. They were in business long before they had their Medicare certification, which means they were seeing patients without billing. That's usually a process, but I believe it's 4 years now. It was started primarily, and I think that's what makes Longleaf a little unique, because they were seeing cancer patients who were needing a high level of care, of skill training that other hospices were not able to deliver. Many of the nurses come from an oncology training background, and they know symptom management, and they realize that just because someone might be on hospice does not preclude them from needing a skilled, aggressive treatment in other areas of their body.
Mm. Very good. Tell us, obviously, you are passionate about what you do. Tell us what you get out of this. Why do you do what you do?
I think that I can make a difference in somebody's life each day. And to me, that's what it's all about. Obviously, I wouldn't have gone into social work if I was wanting to become a multimillionaire, because it's just not the field to do that. But it really makes a difference where if I can share some information about a gift of care that someone can take advantage of and hasn't heard it, and maybe deliver that information in a different way, it's worth my driving in the traffic of Atlanta.
Very good. One last thing. If for our listeners that might be kind of on the edge here or dealing with a severe life-limiting illness and considering hospice, what advice might you have for them?
I would say, as in most situations you're discussing, really listen to what your loved one is saying. If they're saying, you know, I'm just tired of going to the doctors, they're just going to poke me again or run this test, and I really don't want that. Say, well, you know, Mom or Dad or whoever you're speaking with, say, you know, there is another kind of care we can have, and it could be brought right here. How would you like that? Don't be hesitant to introduce. Don't feel like you're guilty and calling in the death squad to your loved one. Just present it in a positive way, saying, you know, I hear you, and there is another kind of care we can get for you.
That's good advice. Thank you. And then finally, if our listeners would like to get in touch with you or get more information about Longleaf Hospice, how might they do that?
Our address for our main office is 2712 Lawrenceville Highway, and that's in Decatur, Georgia. You can reach us by phone at 770-939-9179 or look at our website, which is www.longleafhospicealloneword.com.
Well, thank you again, Patty, for being here with us this morning. We certainly appreciate your words and good advice. Thank you also to our guests in Dallas, Victoria and Angela. And thanks for tuning in. As always, you can listen to this broadcast replayed on our website at www.ujiriaradio.com. And in closing, as always, if the youth of our nation are its greatest asset, then it stands to reason that the seniors of our nation are its greatest treasure. Thank you. God bless.
Ujiria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.